Today's episode is brought to you by Wise, the account that helps you manage your money around the world, which is huge for travelers. I've been a customer and a fan for 10 years. The Wise account helps you send, spend, and receive in different currencies fast, and they do it all without hidden fees or exchange rate markups. This service has been so critical for me in my life as a traveler, as a nomad, as somebody living abroad. And you can join 16 million customers and learn how the Wise account can help you out on the road at wise.com/travel. That's Wise, WISE.com/travel, or download the app. This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder with 7 drive modes. The Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
Travel is a wonderful world. Talk about an industry that's just great. I mean, it's all these people that really, we all end up having to deal with commerce, for lack of a better term. We have to pay our bills. But at the heart of it, it is about this transformation. It's about what travel does to us. It's this lifelong learning, empathy, all those things is what it's about.
That was Greg Sullivan sharing a little bit about his love for travel and working in the travel industry. Greg is the co-founder and CEO of Afar, which is an award-winning travel media brand. If you haven't been to afar.com, I encourage you to check them out. Did a recent collaboration with them on their podcast, Unpacked, where we published my interview series with Tom Tursich, who walked around the world. And I thought since that was going live around this time, it would be cool to invite Greg on the show to get his take on the state of travel, some of the roles and responsibilities of travel media. And one of the core values over at Afar is this idea that travel is a force for good. So I wanted to ask him what that means to him, why he believes that, why that is a foundation for the work that they do over at Afar. And of course, we do a destination dive. I wanted to get his advice on some of the places we should consider visiting now before they get too crowded. You're going to hear all of that and much more in the interview segment today. I hope you enjoy listening in on the conversation. And if you'd like, please stick around on the back end of that interview segment. I'll share my favorite takeaway from this conversation with Greg. And it's one that can certainly change your travel experience on the ground. Plus, I'll leave you with a wonderful quote that sums up this entire episode. Let's get into it, shall we? Buckle up, strap in. Thanks for being here, and welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey, it's Jason here with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show. Thanks for hanging out, letting me bring a little travel into your ears today. This is the show to help you travel the world on your terms, no matter what your situation or experience. Thank you so much for tuning in, for being a part of this community, and I'm excited to bring you today's show. We've got Greg Sullivan, the co-founder and CEO of Afar. They do some incredible work over there, and Greg has also had a lot of success in business. He's obviously built this huge travel media company. So I do a little segment in this interview where I ask for his best advice on working in the travel industry, remote working, and some various topics around that. So that's also a part of this. I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation. I hope you do. Stick around on the back end. Don't forget, I'm going to share my number one travel takeaway from this chat. And I've got a little public service announcement for you, one way you can avoid missing out on free travel. I'll share that on the back end. Now, without further ado, let's slip and slide into this conversation with Greg Sullivan, and I will see you on the other side, my friend. I'm on the line with Greg Sullivan, the co-founder and CEO of Afar, which is an award-winning travel media brand working to make a positive impact on the world through high-quality storytelling that inspires, empowers, and enriches travelers who care. I've been a subscriber of the magazine. I've been on the email list for a long time. Anyway, it's a thrill to have you here. Welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
Well, thank you so much, Jason. Thanks for having me. Look forward to chatting with you.
Is this your first podcast?
It is. It is.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, how did they talk you into it? It was just like, this guy, Jason, he's okay. He won't be too hard on you.
Yeah. Aislinn told me how great you were. And I was like, I'm sure he is, but why does he want to talk to me? Shouldn't he talk to Julia or Joe or one of our other great people?
I don't know. I think you got some stories to share, man. I have a feeling. So you are in New York right now, right? That's
correct. Relocated here last year.
From San Francisco.
Yep.
Where did you grow up?
Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I spent a lot of time in Tulsa, actually.
Come on. Nobody ever says Oklahoma City
is where I spent the most time, actually. Okay. Oklahoma's a bit of like a hidden gem, I feel.
It can be, absolutely.
So did you move out to San Francisco?
I went away to school, and then after school, I ended up in Arizona for many years, 20 years or so, and then I went to San Francisco.
Okay. Like, looking at your career trajectory, I kind of tried to follow it through LinkedIn. It was law school, and then you had this national sports games company that turned into Drive Time Automotive Group. Sounds like that was a big car retailer and finance company. So all this stuff is like completely seemingly unrelated to travel. And then if I've got my chronology correct, it looks like you stopped everything to go study philosophy. is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty much true. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you missed a couple of things before the games business, but yeah. And then I went after the car company, I actually went to school in Cambridge in England for a summer, just kind of as a lark, and I loved it. And I thought, you know what, this would be a cool thing to do. So I went back to school full time to study ethics. Really was my main focus for 3 years, and I actually ended up teaching law and ethics too at Arizona State.
How old were you when you went to Cambridge?
I'd say 45, roughly.
Okay. So yeah. Was that your first study abroad experience?
Yes. Yes. I had not done that. That was really cool. It was really awakening. It was great.
In what ways?
Well, I mean, it was, it was kind of that and a lot. I mean, I used to travel generally. Well, I mean, I came to travel pretty late, but when I did, I generally would go for activities, you know, for skiing or scuba diving or hiking or golfing or, you know, all those kinds of things. That's what I did in my early life. And then as I got older, I had a little more time, and especially, like I say, with the going to school and you had the time of 9 months a year in school and the other time a little free. So I would do some more serious traveling, and I would, you know, go sometimes with a deep commitment to do like a volunteer activity in South Africa, or I would go on a sporadic trip and just kind of go and just kind of go for with an open-ended, like, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'll just figure it out when I get there approach. And I would do both those. And they did kind of change the way I looked at the world and at myself.
I mean, we've had many guests who have been transformed by a study abroad experience, but you may be the first one that was having that experience at such an older age, and still that was transformative to you. I mean, I think it's just a great reminder that there's no limit on transformation. Sadly, I think there's a lot of ageism in the States. When we think about these things, we often think about, you know, it's going to be associated with younger people studying abroad. But I mean, you can do these things at any age.
Yeah, well, hopefully we're always open to change. That's part of the idea, right?
Why did you sort of drop everything to go study philosophy? Was that an intentional career break? Were you burnt out? Like, what was going on in your life at the time?
Yeah, I mean, I'd been very lucky in business. I'd, you know, honestly made more money than I ever expected to. And I was just like, now what? I mean, at first, honestly, the trip to Cambridge was really, I studied science, I studied math. I mean, it really wasn't, that actually is what exposed me to, like, oh, you know what, why not, you know, rather than just study lots of things, I was like, you know, I really want to think about you know, values and ethics and what it's all about and what's living a good life like and how do we help make the world a better place and all those kinds of things. And I thought, you know what? What a chance. I've you know, why don't I go back and do that for a concentrated period of time and, you know, go to school as a format for doing that. And it was amazing. It was a real blessing.
But what brought you to that kind of point where you were pondering that so much that you wanted to actually dive in and spend, you know, months of your life studying and learning?
I was raised in a very, very religious family. And I suppose in college, I honestly kind of stepped back from religion and went about a more secular life, I guess, for lack of a better term. And I had a lot of my friends and family be confused at that, you know, like, gosh, Greg, how can your life, you know, have a rudder without religion? I thought I had answers to that in my own mind, but I guess I've, like I say, when I had time, I wanted to really think about that and just think about it more than just casually, but, you know, in a bit of concentrated way. And so, yeah, I wanted to think about, you know, how do we get our values? What do they mean? How are we going to also, like, how are we going to address the changing world that is like changing at a pace that we've never seen and with problems we've never seen? And so I thought, you know, anyway, let's try to think about that.
What kind of conclusions did you come to?
I mean, I really came to a belief that you know, in general, society has, or communities have come up with answers to how we, you know, basically, like, you know, humans, this is getting a little off the path, but
there is humans, no path. This is a podcast.
Okay, cool. You know, I think, you know, obviously, you know, it's the world is a little bit survival of the fittest, right? And so humans have their selfish drive, which is very important, but communities give us the, like, oh, it's not just about us, it's about the good of the community. And so communities basically came up with ethical guidelines to make the community successful, not just the individuals in the community successful. And so those generally were where most of our ethical traditions came from, usually in the form came from our religions and those were great. And they, you know, the most successful religions, the most successful ethical traditions created successful communities that grew and, you know, largely dominated the world, which are great. But most of those ethical traditions were created thousands of years ago. They're great for solving the problems of their time, but I'm not so sure they necessarily apply to, you know, at least wholeheartedly and completely to problems we face today. And I think we have to keep evolving and, you know, coming up with answers that are best based off of the circumstances today. And that's actually why I came to believe in travel. You know, I tried to teach ethics to college students and I felt like they kind of look at me, you know, like I had three heads and I was just, gosh, if we get these students out really understanding other people and cultures and understanding how all these places people are trying to come up with the best answers based off of their life circumstances, that's the best teacher of all, I think.
Yeah. Did you ever come back to religion in some way, or did you find another sort of path for yourself, or was that just, did you kind of just keep going in the other direction?
By the way, actually, it's funny you say that. I got within 6 credits of getting my master's in philosophy and I stopped. I mean, I'm 40 at this time, I'm 47 years old. What am I going to do with a master's? And I actually switched to religious studies. I'm a big believer religion has a lot of value. Community, you know, does provide an ethical basis. I mean, I'm not personally, you know, a member of a religious, but I'm a huge believer in the value of it.
Yeah. So what would you say are your core values as an individual?
Wow. I don't think anybody's asked me.
Is this
that
too long. Early for these types of questions?
It is about, to me, you know, you want to treat, I mean, the golden rule, treat others as you'd like to be treated, is certainly a good solid basis. being open-minded and empathetic to other people is, you know, at the core. I mean, those things are at the core of it, I suppose. And try to live your life in a way that makes your life feel good to yourself and is hopefully makes the world a better place.
The empathy is, you know, seeing the images on TV, let's say for a campaign or a drive or something, versus actually being in a country and seeing poverty, really taking it in with all of your senses. Travel in that way, really, it can't help but kind of just make you more aware. And whether that increases your empathy or not, I don't know, but I do believe that it can't hurt.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope it does. I mean, there's something interesting that I think happens when you end up in a place that's completely unfamiliar to you. You look with fresh eyes and you'll see many things that, you know, you could see in your hometown, but you see them differently because you are in a different place. And yeah, you will, hopefully you do it with a more open mind and, you know, more curious. That's big in creating empathy, you know, seeing how we're different, seeing how we're the same. You know, I hope it decreases it, the number of people you feel bad, you know, you feel like our enemies in the world and think that we're all kind of just trying our best and trying to solve the problems the best we can.
You mentioned when you were talking about studying, one of the things was, what does it mean to live a happy life? Did you answer that question for yourself?
I mean, yes. I mean, to me, it really is. It's a journey. Keep trying to keep your mind open and keep trying to explore and see what moves you. I think it is constantly evolving.
I mean, you studied philosophy. What is reality, man? I'm just kidding.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I am a relativist. I do believe that we're keep figuring those. I think we keep trying to figure out the best answer based off what we know now.
Yeah. Do you look at this period of your life as a break from, you know, after you left, let's call it the corporate world and the companies you'd built and been involved with? And then you took this time, sounds like for yourself, to explore and to learn and to have these different types of experiences outside of the experiences that you had in the business world. Was there an intentional amount of time that you were going to spend doing that, or was it open-ended? This is leading to, like, how did this all circle back to then getting back into the business world and starting Afar and everything that you've done since?
Yeah. No, it was totally open-ended. Yeah, I had no idea. In fact, that was both very uncomfortable, you know, as somebody pretty driven, type A personality and all that, all of a sudden like to go, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. But that's also very freeing, you know, and you're like, okay. And so I had no idea if I was ever going to work again or anything. I guess if I probably would have, I don't know. I had no idea. I actually did also join like a country club, tried to play golf, and like, well, no, that I quickly decided that wasn't the life I wanted. I was at school. I got, like I said, volunteered, all those things, with no insight. And coincidentally, you know, so I met Joe Diaz, who's the co-founder of Afar. I actually met him when I was still at the car company, actually. He was a Teach for America program. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's kind of, they get people out of great schools to spend their first 2 or 3 years of their career at underfunded public schools to help our education system. And Joe was a teacher in South Phoenix and Spanish speaking neighborhood. And our company used to, every dealership adopted a public school, and the home office adopted Joe's school. And I was a volunteer in his classroom. And this all happened. And, you know, I went away to go to Cambridge, and then I came back and went enrolled in school. And so we had the similar time frames, and we started traveling together because we both had kind of school hours, for lack of a better term. And we'd done a trip to South America. We did a trip to India. And, you know, we both kind of were in this mindset of like, wow, it's especially this trip to India, was just transformative. And we're like, wow, what a great thing to do with our lives, try to help inspire people to get out of their comfort zones and look at other people and perspectives and take that as a way to enrich their own life and grow. What a great thing to do. So we just said, what the heck? Let's try it.
We're going to start this media company.
Yeah.
So in travel. Yeah, I mean, worst case scenario is you're just around travel all the time, right? Even if it doesn't work. So
yeah. We came back and bought how to start a magazine books, and just said, all right, let's see how this goes. And yeah, here we are 14 years later and we're still doing it.
Wow. I mean, congrats. I wanted to hear a bit more about the trip to India. You mentioned that as particularly being like that one specifically, I should say, being a transformative trip for you. What happened there? What did you experience?
Well, India is just such a amazing place. I don't know if you've ever been there, but we went there. All we had was a flight into Delhi, and we had a flight out of Mumbai 6 weeks later with zero hotel reservations, zero plans. And we just landed and started talking to people and kind of going, what should we do? You know, like I say, back to India itself. I mean, it's got so many contrasts. It's got amazing, you know, its history is very apparent, goes back thousands of years, but it's also has modernity changing the place at an amazing pace. It has some of the most beautiful palaces that you'll ever see, and has abject poverty staring you in the face. It has, you know, beautiful smells of rose petals, and it has, you know, horrible smells of slums. And, you know, it has it all, you know, it has it all. And it just is just, it hits you in the face, hits you in the nose, hits you in the ears, everywhere. It's just stimulating in every way. And like I say, we just met people and they would let us into their lives for whatever reason. And yeah, it's just like, wow. And so it was just hit us in all the senses. And we would, you know, we actually ended up in an ashram. We ended up at a school. We ended up at so many different places. And at the end of it, we were in Goa, which is in some sense maybe the least Indian part of India. And we're just reflecting on it on a beach afterwards. And like, wow, this was really cool. How do we help inspire other people to do something like this?
Hmm. How long was the trip?
6 weeks.
Yeah, okay.
It was just a pretty good liberty. Amazing that we were able to do that.
So really at the end of it was, that's where the idea, you guys started taking it seriously.
Oh yeah, it was on the beach in Goa.
That's right where it was born, on the beach
drinking,
in Goa?
Drinking Kingfisher beer, and yeah. And then, like I say, it's funny, we had lost all our luggage at the beginning of the trip, and we got back to Arizona and our luggage was on my front porch. And you know, we had to get clothes made in India and all that kind of stuff.
Really? Yeah. Change the relationship to your possessions, right? You're like, well, I guess
too.
I didn't really need this this backpack or suitcase after all.
Yeah, I know, it's true. It was a huge backpack, you know, huge backpack we'd bought just for the trip and all that. And it's just on the porch when you get home. Like, oh, I guess I didn't need all that stuff.
So when you guys started up, what did that look like? Were you bootstrapping? Was it funded? I'm just curious how you go from an idea and four books on how to start a magazine to building what you've built.
Fortunately, we've been funded all ourselves. Have one friend that's also in it. And no, we just came back. We actually reached out to one of the authors of one of those textbooks and went and met him. He's here in New York. He actually helped helped start Playboy magazine, believe it or not. And we just reached out to all kinds of people and said, gosh, what are we doing? What do you think? And built a business plan and recruited people that, fortunately, you know, that did know more about the media business than Joe and I, and had many people like, wow, yes, I think this is a great vision. How can I help?
It seems like you were in the position to not have to work again if you didn't want to.
Correct.
Yet you chose to take all the risk and do it all again.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Believe me, there was a part of me. It's like, gosh, do I really want to do this? And this is crazy. believe me, even in, you know, by the way, 2008, there's two things, of course. By the way, magazines are not even in 2008, magazines were not viewed as the up and coming new.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
We're let's not all viewed start a as magazine. A great investment opportunity. And two, 2008, if our first employees started 1 week after Lehman Brothers collapse, and it was the beginning of the big 2008, 2009 Great Recession. So the world was financially was not looking very good, but I was just like, you know what? This is important to me. It's something I believe in. Like, life is short. I want to do what I think this will be great. And, it is a great, it's the greatest thing I've ever done.
Really?
Oh yeah, absolutely. This has been amazing. Travel is a wonderful world. You find, I mean, talk about an industry that's just great. I mean, it's all these people that really, most people, I mean, you know, we all end up having to deal with commerce, for lack of a better term. We have to pay our bills. But at the heart of it, it is about this transformation. It's about what travel does to us. It's this lifelong learning, empathy, all those things is what it's about. And so it has some of the best people I've ever met in it.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off the beaten path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys. And it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds. So you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there. And that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself. And that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures. And enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. If you love coffee like me, let me tell you how you can get an incredible cup of coffee, whether you're at home or on the road. You can use what I use, which is the AeroPress. Have you seen this? This is a device that uses a patented 3-in-1 brew technology. It combines the flavor benefits of espresso, pour over, and French press into one compact, portable device built for travel or home. The AeroPress has over 55,000 five-star reviews in 60 countries. Plus, it's the best-reviewed coffee press on the planet. That tells you something. And it makes an incredible gift. Under $50. Get one for yourself or somebody you care about. Pick yours up at aeropress.com/zero to travel. That's AeroPress, AeroPress.com/zero to travel. Use the promo code zero to travel, all one word, to save 20% off your order. That's 20% off. Thank you to AeroPress for the delicious coffee and for supporting today's show. Now, back to the show. What did the early days look like for you guys? Say the first year.
Oh, it was. I mean, it was honestly the thing I was most worried about at the beginning was that it would launch and nobody would care, you know, that it wasn't going to be any good. And, you know, fortunately we had, like you say, we were able to attract people like Julia Cosgrove, our current editor-in-chief, you know, that were really good at their jobs. And so right off the bat, the magazine was viewed as groundbreaking and excellent and amazing. So, you know, so that was so gratifying. Oh, God, oh, well, thank God. At least we don't suck. Now I just have to figure out how to pay the bills.
We might lose all our money, but at least we don't suck.
Exactly.
There's something to that, though, isn't there?
Yeah.
You can put out something that you're proud of and that you can stand behind. That counts.
At least then, if you fail, like, you can go, well, you know, at least it wasn't a total failure. You know, at least I delivered something that was good. And so, yeah, then, you know, and the business side has been, you know, very challenging. Like I say, media is difficult in general, enterprise, particularly magazines. And so, of course, we've evolved to be primarily a digital company, which was a difficult path to try to find the way to digital success. And, you know, now we've gotten podcasts, and, you know, so we've had to evolve. But we got a great team that really believes in the mission and, yeah, been very adaptive and flexible and entrepreneurial to making a success.
The mission being travel is a force for good. It seems like that's one of the sort of the core mission statements, I guess. Is you want to explain a bit about them? We've touched on it a bit, but I don't know if you had like when you guys get together and talk
about
what that
means.
Yeah,
well, about trying to inspire people to travel in a way that enriches their lives, purposeful travel, but also that, you know, is about, well, of course, it's not just about me. It's also about how do I impact the communities we're visiting and how are we. And of course, there's a cost on all of this. It's like there's environmental costs and how do we minimize those and maximize the positives?
That's one of the million-dollar questions right now, I'd say, in travel. Well, travel media specifically, when does travel media do more harm than good?
I mean, when you encourage people just to be lemmings, you know, to just follow and not be conscious of the communities they're visiting and their impact on the planets, then I think it is negative, you know, or and also just like treating it as just consumption, you know, like, you know, take a picture of yourself in front of the whatever the site, suck whatever you can out of the community and leave. I mean, that's obviously when it's all about you and bragging rights or whatever, that's not good.
It's tough because trip lengths vary and thinking about travel as a force for good, but also, as you mentioned, it can be harmful to the environment. And
it can be devastating. Yeah.
This kind of ties back to the morals and ethics that you studied for so long, right? I mean, there's just so much. I mean, thankfully, I think now more than ever, it's talked about in travel. And this is one of the things that we've tried to keep bringing up here on the show when we have these conversations. You know, you have a platform with Afar, and I know you guys, you know, you have your Vanguard Awards, you have different things that you do to bring attention to that stuff. And it seems to me that the media you create, there's an awareness around all of those issues. It's not just ignored, it's discussed, it's written about. What do you see as the biggest issues, let's say, in travel media and tourism right now? And I mean, I guess you could talk specifically about what you guys are doing to kind of tackle that. But, you know, just generally, I mean, I think we're all kind of in this together, right? So yeah, just biggest issues and kind of what maybe we need to do as a collective of travelers and explorers to kind of tackle those issues.
We've been kind of talking afar about these things since we launched, and it is so gratifying to see how the industry is evolving and really speaking about these things themselves and is very concerned. And I just, in December, I went to the WTTC conference in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. WTTC is the World Travel Tourism Council, which is basically the CEOs of all the major travel companies, the hotels, the airlines, cruise lines, et cetera. It was so amazing to hear all these CEOs get up on stage and basically be talking about, one, both the power of travel for positive, but also very mindful of its negative impact on communities and the environment when done, you know, when done wrong. And I had not heard that in so clearly by so many in the whole time we've been in the industry. So I actually think, ironically, and this might surprise people, I actually think the industry leaders are probably ahead of the consumers in their consciousness. You always think industry leaders don't really care, but when you think about it, it's really like, if they're thinking long-term about their business, they have to know that, one, if we're having a negative impact on the communities we're visiting, the communities are going to kick us out or not. And two, if we're having a negative impact on the planet, they're going to, we're ultimately not going to be able to travel. You know, they're going to, so they're all like, yes, we have to confront this. And it's actually consumers who are more kind of dragging, more like, it's complicated to figure out how to do it. And two, like, I'm on vacation. I'll worry about it some other time.
Do you see any big things happening, big systemic changes right now that are, you just look and say, oh, this is definitely going in the right direction?
I think things are moving quickly. Now, of course, pressures are, you know, also, you know, we had COVID, of course, which shut down our industry, and it gave all of us a chance to really think, well, hey, when it comes back, can we build it better? And I think a lot of that is in motion and is happening. But of course, on the other hand, you know, there is the, you know, short-termness still comes, you know, and money is, you know, it's like, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, by the way, people are coming, let's just run with it, you know? And so we just have to make sure we're not just recreating some of the problems we had before. But I do know we know better, and I think people are trying. We just have to keep up the pressure. That's partly what we think our job is at Afar.
As an individual traveler, I mean, this is always a tough thing to think about. You know, is there a time when you know, it's just better to stay home?
Sure. Absolutely. No, I mean, it just...
Do you have general rules for that? Or?
No, I don't. I'm not a big rule book person. That kind of goes back to my ethics too, I suppose. But I believe it's just purposeful. It's like everyone making a decision is this going to be a net positive on the world, my trip? And, you know, weighing all the pluses and minuses and saying, hey, is this trip going to be, you know, better for me and better for the world than if I don't make it? And if you can't say yes, stay home.
It's so tough though, isn't it? I mean, if
you think about, I don't mean to talk it simple, but at least if we're trying that, that's a big part of the battle. I mean, by the way, you could say that about everything, by the way. It's not just travel. I mean, we're consuming natural resources and having effects living at home. So, you know, it's not, you know, you don't have, we shouldn't live our life in fear either. I mean, we're just trying the best we can.
Yeah. I mean, there's no easy answer to the question. I'm just curious about your thought. I mean, I think about your trip to India and thinking, you know, how that culminated into the whole idea that you have now with Afar and that you guys are running and you've been able to make an impact with. And, you know, if you don't go on that trip, is that all just a race? This is where I always wonder, you know, travel leads to certain things. And I think at least in my head, when you're weighing, I guess, the cost benefit in terms of like actual costs and maybe environmental costs and the other things of a trip, you know, I think some trips you can have a good sense of like, okay, maybe coming out of this, they'll be in the big picture. This will lead to something else and it will offset the, like I said, let's say the negative impact of the trip. If there's a, you know, let's say, you know, if we're talking about core negative impacts, like the emissions and that sort of thing. But I mean, yeah, it's, you know, the you can never know. There's no way to know. So it's difficult.
Yeah. But I mean, that's true every time you get in your car to go to the grocery store or whatever. I mean, you know, it's like, yeah. And that's what I mean. You know, it's like, being mindful, being conscious, trying the best we can. That's what it's all about.
How do you think AI will change the industry?
Wow. How do you think AI is going to change the world? I mean, I don't know if you read Ezra Klein's article in the Times this week. Some people think it's going to just turn our world upside down in the next year. That, you know, our machine's going to run the world. I don't know. That's
having flashes of like Schwarzenegger and the Terminator.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, that's a big one. I do not know. It goes to like the answer, you know, is there a, you know, that's at least what I, you know, you go to AI and ask it a question to get an answer, you know, like, you know, and then like I say, I kind of like not a believer in one answer, you know, it's a believer. There's a lot of right answers and a lot of, you know, wrong answers. And it's like, that's part of what we do in life is try different things and experiment and learn. But is that a better way? I don't know. I'm interested to, I'm looking forward to that exploration, but it is scary. It's scary, but it's also exciting. I'm still an optimist. I think we're going to get better and be smarter and we'll use that for good. Sure. Hoping so.
Yeah. I stumbled on an AI where it will create a podcast. You can pick the voice and everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to Bulgaria here shortly. So I thought, well, let me just type in, make a podcast about travel tips to Bulgaria. Let me see what this AI is made of. You know, I got to tell you, Greg, it was pretty generic. You know, they were like, you know, make sure you pack enough. I was like, all right, you know, the AI is not winning yet.
Oh, exactly. No, I mean, I've experimented with it too. But it is, on the other hand, I mean, like we've asked it to write an article and, you know, and it's like, yes, it's no threat to us today, but it's also like, wow, it's better than I would ever have expected. It's certainly not a threat today to what you and I do, but I think we can use it as a way to make ourselves better. We'll see.
It's going to be interesting to see how things evolve over the next few. It's just incredible how much things are changing. It's crazy. I have to get some business advice from you. I mean, you've built all these successful businesses and you've done it again. I don't know. Have you ever failed at a business?
Yes.
Can you talk about like one of your biggest failures that you've never shared before? Maybe you got something's coming to mind. I can see it in your eyes.
Well, I mean, by the way, there's failures every day in business.
Right.
I mean, by the way, you can't be a travel media company and gone through COVID without being humble. That was, you know, basically having, I used to try to tell our team, like, you know, there's going to be a recession coming and we got to be prepared for it. And, you know, then we hit COVID and, you know, travel stops, revenue goes to zero. We weren't ready for that. But, you know, yes, I had a business that ultimately failed. It was we started an investment banking business when I was in my late 20s, and it basically failed. We were basically overlevered and not smart enough, but there's luck in all of these things and circumstances sometimes align in your favor. Sometimes they don't.
What are your thoughts on failure? Do you have like a relationship with failure? I mean, like you said, as a business owner, you kind of have to just battle through it all the time, but making mistakes and failure and that sort of thing. How do you view that?
So, you know, an entrepreneur like yourself, you know, you have a part of you that has to go through brick walls, you know, kind of ignore, you kind of have to ignore problems to some extent, you know, or charge through them, you know, but on the other hand, you also have to go, all right, no, this one requires a diversion. I have to bounce off this one and go a different direction. And knowing the difference of like when to charge ahead and when to divert, and you know, like I say, it's humbling. You sometimes you're wrong, sometimes you're right, and you just try to figure out what's core and what is non, you know, needs to be stuck with, and what things you can change. And once again, it's not, I don't think there's always a right or a wrong answer. You just have to be willing to explore all the time.
I'll do a little segment called Your Best Advice. I need your best advice for a few different things here. I know you just pretty recently got together with your team, which is spread out, and you guys were in Oregon for a week. That's right. If I've done my research correctly.
You're amazing.
Wearing my Oregon shirt, by the way.
Nice. Yeah, we're in Portland. It was fantastic.
Wonderful place. But this is leading to the question of managing a distributed team, working remotely. I want to hear your best advice for, I suppose, an individual working remotely that also wants to take advantage of that and travel around and still get things done. And then we can go on the sort of company management side and ask about sort of how you guys manage a distributed team.
By the way, I'll just go give you a little history. We used to be San Francisco and New York based. We had two offices, physical offices in both cities, and probably 95% of our employees in those two offices. COVID happened.
Those are real cheap rents there, I heard.
In those cities. So we bought out both those leases when, you know, in the midst of the pandemic. Unfortunately, we shrunk as a size of company down to about half our size. And then when things started coming back slowly, we started hiring again, bringing back some of the people that had left. We're like, okay, are we going to go back to office? Or we're like, can't see that now, financially, one. And two, like, by the way, our people that were in those cities largely dispersed too. So we're like, well, do we really want to hire people in the two most expensive cities in the world, or two of the most? And we said, no. Our team basically was like, well, this frees us up to hire, you know, more diversity in all kinds of ways in different places. And so, yeah, we became very distributed, which was exciting. And we were amazed at how well we were able to operate as a business, not seeing each other every day, particularly like a magazine that, you know, we always thought was very much an in-person paper thing, but produced it distributed. I think what's been key for us is we do have kind of this mission, this purpose of like why people believe in this. And so people have, like I say, we have an employee in Nairobi, we have an employee in Singapore, an employee in London, you know, we're all over the place, and people love that. It makes us better as a company in some sense to be a global media company, you know, about travel. It makes sense to have people all over the world. So it's fantastic. But of course, you know, the downside is, well, there's a couple downsides is, you know, fortunately we had 13 years of history that created a culture that really helps drive it. But how do you know, those relationships, how do you keep the love and the empathy, you know, that we had as in person virtually? And we're still learning on that and experimenting. And that's why we've always had company meetings where we get together once a year in person. But now that time was even more important that we did that last year. So back to your question, I guess, what advice for employees? I mean, I think you do want to go ahead and, you know, it's great. Take advantage of that. You can work from anywhere. But also that, you know, you're out on a limb in some sense in that case. And that's my thing is like, don't get exposed. You know, if you're getting stressed, remember to reach out to somebody and get help. Because, you know, that's the thing is, like I say, having people be alone is good, but alone can also be a problem. And so, you know, if they've got to feel comfortable reaching out for help when they're struggling, whatever kind of struggle, work, emotional, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. It must've been pretty interesting to go from like a sort of we're seeing each other every day environment to not that. But yeah, like I said, you have the built-in culture. It can be hard to manufacture culture through the internet. I really do think you have to get together in person. And like you guys did in Oregon, have like these retreats or have these get-togethers and really solidify those bonds or keep them strong.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I'm old school. So yeah, I think it's very important to get together in person. I mean, that's, by the way, that goes to travel. Like, by the way, it's like, can you travel virtually? Yeah, sure, you can. It's not the same, but you can, you can see a place through your computer screen and that you can do a lot of things, but it's not the same as face-to-face.
What is your best advice for scaling a company?
I mean, two things, I guess. Again, I think it's real important to have, clear whys, what you're trying to do, why you're doing what you're doing, clear what you're trying to do, and then have great people, People, of course, are the key to it all. And
how do you find great people?
I think that why helps a lot. If you have a good why, great
people
might be attracted to it. Mm. Being true to that and being open to letting other people tell you how to do it better or differently. Because they want to contribute. They don't want to, at least we're looking for people that aren't just looking to be told what to do, but are looking to help create the better way to do it.
Yeah, that's always a great feeling. I'm just, if someone's helped me out with something, I just say, you're here because you're way smarter than me. So if you can just make this better, that'd be great. What is your best advice for making sure your life is in balance, that you have time for yourself, your loved ones? How do you, you mentioned being a type A. How do you do that? Do you do it?
I'm no expert in this, by the way.
I don't think anybody is, but it's good to hear kind of, I like to hear different perspectives on it,
But, so. I think you listen to your body, you listen to your soul. I mean, like I say, if you start feeling anxiety, you start feeling tired, you start feeling ill, like examine that. Where'd it come from? Ask your, okay, maybe it's time to back off, believe me, that's one of the big things I try to talk to our employees about, particularly since we're not together. It's like, I'm always cautious and like, take care of yourself. That's number one. If you're not taking care of yourself, you're not going to be, this isn't going to work. and it's funny, as a boss, it's normally like they say, you're going to be the other, and of course we're very, very objective driven. We're trying to achieve, but when you get great people, you also have to tell them they need to take care of themselves. I'm not the one to tell you how to do that, but I'm the one to tell you you need to do it.
I mean, is there anything you do for yourself to kind of protect your time, or do you have like certain practices or things that you do?
I'm not one of those, as you can probably tell, I'm not one of those big rule persons. I don't like, I close my computer at a certain time and I don't, I don't open my device. I'm not that. I do that, but it's not the same thing all the time. Like I'll go a weekend, I'll go, I'm off unless it's an emergency or whatever, but it's not like I have it all the time. It's very much, I try to be adaptive. I mean, based off of the circumstances and listen to myself and like, I'm going, hey, I'm tired. I need to shut it down. I do it. So I mean, that's about the third time I've talked about rules. And so I'm going to go back to the ethics thing because it's so like,
you're an anarchist, I guess.
Well,
is that what it comes down to?
A scofflaw. in philosophy, there's basically three things you study. There's meta ethics. Is there such a thing as ethics? Ethics is, if there is such a thing as ethics, what are the rules? And then there's applied ethics, is applying those rules, say, to biology or to, medical world or something. But so let's go to the middle one, the ethics, if there are, what are the rules. And so there's basically also three, I can't believe I'm getting into this, but there's also three basic things like precepts of what where the rules are going to be around. How do you judge whether something's good or bad? And so there's consequentialism, you know, based off of the results of your act, you know, the consequences. Then there's ones based off the principle of your act. And then there's ones based off of your mindset at the time you act, you know. And so there's been various philosophers make rules in each one of those categories, but we've all discovered none of them work perfectly well. You know, that's why we don't have it. There is no rule book. and it's like, so we all, you know, all those things matter. You know, what was the principle involved, you know, or what was, how did it affect the people? How did my act affect the people? And by the way, what was my mindset when I did it? All those things matter. And there's just no clear answer. So, but we try the best we can with all those things. And we see the way other people answer those questions. And we go, yeah, I like that. I'm going to try to do what that person did or what that society did.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. Here's a quick powerful exercise. If you think about one or two of your big goals, and then you fast forward a few months from now, what can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If one of those goals for you is learning a new language, or even just a little bit of a language to enhance your next trip, you should absolutely get Babbel. They have quick 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts. You can actually start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations, exactly what you want as a traveler. I just downloaded it and went into the Norwegian course area thinking, oh, I've got this. Immediately made a bunch of grammar mistakes that they corrected. And I was like, oh, I've been doing this wrong. So I'm already leveling up and learning. And you can get Babbel now. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/zerototravel. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/zerototravel, spelled babbel.com/zerototravel. Rules and restrictions may apply. Thank you to Babbel for supporting today's show. Hey, you lovely listener, it's Jason here. And did you know we have a newsletter and it's free? You can sign up over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. You're going to get money-saving tips, destination advice, some musings, little personal updates, all the stuff that you don't get right here on the podcast. And we can keep in touch. So sign up over there, zerototravel.com/newsletter. Get your weekly dose of travel value, totally free. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the show. I want to get into some destination talk, but I'll ask you one more best advice for question, and that's going to be for working in the travel industry, for anybody listening who wants to work in the travel industry.
Wow. To get into the industry? Or
I guess,
or once they're in it, or what's the question?
Yeah, sure, I mean, it can be both, I guess. Just your yeah. Your best advice for, let's say, breaking into the travel industry, or you know, finding a place in it and working in it.
Well, first, I just encourage them to get in it. It is, like I said, I think it's got, of all the industries, I've worked in a few different fields, I just think the people are the best, and they're in general very open and inclusive, and they're trying to live the life the best they can and grow and et cetera. So it's just, and I think that bring that spirit to it and show that you also care. And you'll be welcomed and take advantage of it, of getting to know those people. And when you travel, your purpose, it's easier to be purposeful because you're now an insider. You can help figure out how to do, you know, have the right kind of trip that has an impact both on yourself. That's what good and good on the communities you're visiting.
Okay. A little bit about destinations, and then I'll let you go about your day here shortly. So hang with me. Thanks for taking on my barrage of questions. Okay. So the doorbell rings and there's a huge package on your front doorstep, and it's a teleportation device, and you can use it for a day. What do you do? Where do you go? I'm talking, you can teleport anywhere in the world and have breakfast. You can do something in the afternoon, some kind of activity, have some lunch, go somewhere and have some dinner. What does your day look like? It's a ridiculous question, I know. Believe me. But I thought you might be able to take us around the world a little bit with this one.
I don't know if I can literally answer that, but I'll answer it as best I can. You know, I first think about, okay, well, where to go, you know, and probably my favorite thing to do is go somewhere I've never been, you know, and of course, in some sense, by the way, you're always doing that because no place is ever the same. But that's kind of the spirit. It's like, okay, I want to go somewhere new, experience something new. And so where
is that?
Oh God. I mean, like
you have to pick one. You only got the device for a day, Greg.
Oh, so you're gonna, where am I going first?
Yeah.
I mean, so by the way, one of the first things we did with Afar, one of our most famous features was called Spin the Globe. And that's what we would do that. We had a globe and we'd spin it and, you know, put a finger on a spot and we'd send a writer there, without any notice, basically. And, you know, we'd go ahead and buy their ticket to that place. We wouldn't tell them anything until basically we gave them their ticket. And then they would go and it is that, and you know, it goes to, it's kind of two things about that is one, any place in the world can be fascinating and you can grow from, and two, sometimes itineraries get in the way of experience. You know, you're so much like, oh, what am I going to do? It's like, oh, just go there and figure it out. Kind of like we did in India. And so I'm a big believer in that. Like, it's just a journey and just go. and that's what I do. I think I'd spin the globe and just land somewhere and just the first person I met, I'd just start talking to them and figure out where that takes me. But I do say we do the other too. Like the more, you know, the other way is that's good. Sometimes you actually want to have a deep dive and like, so is there some way to really get in and give yourself a really, like I say, deep dive into that place because of somebody or some activity. That's another way I travel a lot is if there's somebody or something that I can go do that I think is going to give me deep insights or some impact that's going to be very transformative or whatever, very impactful, then that's a reason to go, if that makes sense. So those are two big ways I look at it. And then I guess the other thing I like to do when I think about is this destination, what's going on there at the moment? And, you know, I do like to go to places, what I call a moment in time. And of course, everything's always a moment in time, but, you know, real pronounced. You know, I went to Egypt right in their revolution. I went to, you know, Puerto Rico right after Hurricane Maria. I went to Iran right as that looked like that was opening up in 2015, 16. I like to look at like a moment in like, hey, is this place about to change radically? Going to Cuba right as it was opening in, what was that, 2011, 12. So yeah, those kinds of things I like to look for.
Yeah. Are there any places that come to mind right now in this moment of time that you would think would fit the bill for a trip like that?
I mentioned at the beginning of this that I went to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia in December. Fascinating, you know, and by the way, we wrote about it and we had many people write back very unhappy with us that we were traveling to and talking about traveling to Saudi Arabia. Obviously, their government has done some outrageous things and still doing some outrageous things. But I believe travel is also going to change that place for the better. Anyway, back to the moment in time there, this was a country, you know, it's got 36 million Saudi Arabians, that had largely been closed off to travel for the last 100 years or so, you know, but basically, it had Muslims that could travel for Hajj, and then it had some business travel, but in general, leisure travel was totally restricted to this country. And it's been largely closed. And most people don't know much about Saudi Arabia for all of that. And it is trying to become, all of a sudden, like turn itself overnight into one of the most open for travel communities. They're trying to go from 20 million visitors a year, which most of those are on Hajj, to 100 million a year by 2030, building all the infrastructure and all that to make it happen. You know, value judgment aside, whether that's good or bad or whatever, that's what's happening. The place is being transformed. Women couldn't drive a car, couldn't go to the same restaurant as you and me, are all of a sudden, you know, given new rights. It's just changing quickly. And that's fascinating. So, yeah, I thought it was it was good to go there, and I'm interested in going back.
Are there one or two places that you've been where your expectations were maybe just low or non-existent, and then you were blown away?
I mean, yes, for sure. I try to go with few expectations in a sense. I mean, by the way, that's kind of like I say, we try to say, travel with an open mind and a curious heart, or a curious mind and an open heart. Either they're both the same. Having too many preconceptions is what you don't want to do, right? Because that's so. So I'm constantly surprised, I suppose. I mentioned I went to Iran in 2015, 2016. I was very surprised by that visit. You know, one, I'd known about the sanctions, and, you know, you see the images you see on TV. I mean, I was around in 79 when all the Iran hostage crisis happened, and, you know, death to America and all of that. And so one, it was like, first of all, the place was more modern and vibrant and happening than I ever would have expected. That was one where part of why I went was a fellow friend kind of introduced me to somebody who lived there, and he picked me up, took me first on a motorcycle there were three of us on the motorcycle driving through the streets of Tehran, and then got me on a bus and basically announced to people that he had this American on the bus. And everybody, I mean, people, some people thought I was a jerk because I was from America, and some people thought I was amazing because I was from America. Like, they go, so I don't know where I'm going with this, but they a lot of very well educated, very open minded people, and then, of course, a lot of people that were, you know, their experiences taught them to be afraid of us. You know, to think ill of us. So that was amazing.
The encounters, the people you meet when you're traveling. I'm just wondering if there's a person or an experience or a small act of kindness that you were shown, let's say, out on the road somewhere that sticks with you that you'll never forget.
I'll go to one actually that I don't know if I've ever even talked about. This would have been 2002. I was actually, this was back when I really, like I say, I wouldn't say I was an afar traveler. I was not an experiential traveler. This was the days when I was going to Switzerland for go skiing with a friend. And we were going right after Christmas, the day after Christmas. And, we went to Zermatt, and we had our skis, and this was kind of a spin the globe. I didn't have any plans. I didn't have any hotel reservations. We just showed up at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, and started walking around. You have to check your cars at Zermatt. It's a walking town. And so we're carrying our stuff going from hotel to hotel. And it was fully booked, fully booked, fully booked. And, you know, it got to be like midnight. You know, this one clerk at a hotel saw my eyes, you know, just get really sad. Like, oh my God, this is what is going to happen. And she said, you know what? you and your friend can come stay at my place. And we're like, what? And yeah, she invited us to her home. And yeah, we ended up staying there for 3 nights. And yeah, it really was kind of the beginning of that, like, oh, wow. It's like I saw things I never would have seen if I'd stayed at a hotel and just gone skiing and partying and the like, which I was what it was my original plan, you know. And it started like, oh, wow, if you really, really tried to understand, meet these people and understand them, it's an amazing experience.
Mm. Kind of like opened up a whole other style of travel in a way, yeah. It sounds like. Yeah, amazing. We can end on that. I can let you go about your day now, I suppose. I have more questions, but I can save them for another time.
Well, I don't know if I have many more answers. I don't know that I had any answers, but I certainly enjoyed talking with you. Thank you for this. And I hope
so nice to hear. Thank you. Yeah, no, I really appreciate the work you guys are doing at Afar. And of course, we'll leave the links to all of the things in the show notes here. But like I said, I'm a fan of the narratives and the storytelling and your approach to travel. And I appreciate what you guys are doing for the travel industry.
We're big fans of yours too. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I look forward to hopefully staying in touch. And hey, you mentioned wanting to come through Norway. You said it's been on your list for a while. So here we are.
I would love that.
Come here, man. We'll do a sauna.
I'm down. You would be careful what you wish for. I'm the kind that will do it.
Hey, I mean, we got places to crash over here. You know, we're all good. Thanks again for your time and appreciate it and look forward to staying in touch, Greg. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Jason. All right.
Take care.
Bye.
There you have it. Special thanks once again to Greg Sullivan for stopping by the show and the team at Afar for helping to arrange this conversation. Before I let you go, I do want to share a couple things. My number one takeaway from this chat, got a little public service announcement for you, something that can help you avoid losing free travel. And I'll leave you with a nice quote first. This takeaway, Greg mentioned this a few times during the chat, where he said he just showed up somewhere and just started talking to people. And that is a great reminder. I know we all do that as travelers. We want to meet locals. We want to put ourselves out there. But just that concept of showing up and just starting to talk to people can really open things up on any adventure right away. And I've really found this when I arrive in a new country or a new place. If there's a time where I arrive and I'm just sort of tired and closed off, usually I end up getting to the hostel or the hotel or wherever I'm staying and kind of like grabbing the map. And maybe it's a little more of an introverted experience, kind of figuring things out, diving into my own head of what I want to do and stuff like that. Whereas sometimes I arrive and I just start talking to people, as Greg mentioned, and it just opens things up right away. It really does. And no matter how tired you are, or how jet lagged or annoyed because you're wandering around, you can't find a place to stay, or whatever the case is, that idea of showing up and just starting to talk to people, I think is a good one and was my takeaway from this interview that I wanted to share with you. Now, quick public service announcement. I put this out on my newsletter last week. You can sign up for that over at zerototravel.com. And the theme of the newsletter was staycations because I had just recently taken a road trip with my kids. It was my first solo trip. I'm using solo in air quotes. My first solo trip that I took with my kids where it was just them and me and we were on our own for a weekend and it was awesome. It was so great. But one of the reasons why we ended up going to Fredrikstad, which is a wonderful town in Norway, only about an hour and a half from Oslo, really perfect, not too far away, yet felt a world away in some ways. And one of the reasons why we ended up there is not just the proximity to where I live, but also I had some expiring airline miles with SAS that needed to be used. And what I did is I went in and I started searching around. I wasn't going to use them for a flight. It wasn't enough for a flight, but it was enough to find a hotel room. And I found the cheapest, least amount of miles I could use and afford hotel room, which was really a camping place that had rooms that also had shared bathrooms and a mini golf course and like a little activity village there. But it was perfect. It was perfect. It had just bunk beds, very basic, had a small refrigerator, nothing fancy. Didn't have to use a ton of miles for it, but really was the experience I was looking for. And it was wonderful. It was kind of like the hostel experience, like the shared kitchen and all that, but nothing fancy. And that was great. It was perfect. We didn't shower. We ate pizza and tons of snacks and went to cafes and playgrounds and a model train museum. And we just had a blast. Took all the cheesy tourist pictures and everything like that. But my public service announcement is this. Well, I can actually give you two. But the first one is, if you're somebody that collects points and miles and exchanges them for free travel, don't forget to check and make sure that your points aren't expiring or your miles aren't expiring or you don't have any that are expiring soon. If you do, use them. So the announcement is, go check and make sure you don't have any points or miles that are expiring, because if you do, you better use them up. A couple ways to do that. One, you can just manually log in and check your accounts. And if you have any expiring points, may I suggest you add that to your calendar so you don't forget. You can add a date on the day before they're expiring so you have a last minute warning. And I usually add two more. I add one 6 weeks prior to that so I can actually use them and plan the trip, 6 to 8 weeks. And then another one a couple weeks before that date, just in case I forget. So do that. And you can also use apps. There's apps like TripIt and Award Wallet, which is one that I've used, where you can actually track all your points and miles in one place. So those are convenient. So those are a couple ways you can just make sure you're not giving up and missing out on free travel that you should be getting. If you've spent all this time, months, perhaps years, accruing miles and points, don't forget to make sure to check, because some of those do expire and you're going to want to use them up. So there you go. The second public service announcement, if we want to do two here, and then I'll leave you with a quote, is to take a staycation. Now, I know some people define staycations as just staying at home and treating it like a vacation. I'm talking about a staycation that is within a reasonable day drive of where you live. If you haven't done it in a while, I'll throw that out as a challenge. Take a staycation, and you might find that you don't have to travel very far to get that feeling of travel. I know we often dream about the big trips and the destinations and the gap years and all the different things we have going on, but the meeting locals and seeing new things and getting lost and getting that travel feeling, that freedom of the road, that little buzz we get when we're out on the road, you can get that just right close to home. You know, we went to a cafe over that weekend, and the woman working at the cafe just, you know, she runs the cafe. She's just kind of working, whatever. Started chatting with her, and turns out she had once driven a car from Norway to Iraq. What are the chances? I mean, I don't know. Do I have like travel podcaster written all over my face where people just tell me these things? I don't even know how that came out in conversation, but those small interactions, one of the greatest joys of travel. Okay, let me leave you with a quote. Speaking of meeting strangers and interactions, this is a great one from William Butler Yeats, who said, "There are no strangers here, only friends you haven't yet met." And I feel the same about this Zero to Travel podcast community. There are no strangers here, only friends you haven't yet met. Perhaps we will meet one day in the near future. I hope so. Thanks for listening. And thanks for your time today. I'll see you next week. Cheers and peace and love to you and yours.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.